And here is what I am doing. The steps that I am taking to see that it doesn't happen again. Now, there is one other strategy. And that is to say it was an accident. Okay? And maybe one time in 100, you might be able to get away with that. It was an accident. Certainly, there are times when you want to say it was unintended. You know, certainly you did not anticipate this outcome. But basically, when you've got an organizational failure, and it's clear out there, that's the only way to get rid of it. And the more the organization makes excuses and backs off, the worse it gets. And again, the Iran-Contra affair, as Watergate and many others are clear proof of that. The disagreement has a pretty simple strategy for dealing with it. But frankly, it's kind of to almost wave the flag around the First Amendment and to agree that the opposition has a right to make these points. But what the opposition has then done is set you up with a chance to make your point and flank it. It's a rare campaign where you had as many people paying attention before they raised the opposition, so don't forget that. Don't look at it as negative. 5% of the public was paying attention to your report. Someone stands up and says, what are you doing? Now you've got about 25% of the public, so don't miss the opportunity. But if you come on and tell those jerks, well, they know about it. Here's what's going on. Of course, you've now got 25% of the audience knowing who the real jerks are. So the skill is to be able to say, obviously, in our society, you know, they're raising a good point, an interesting point, but, and make your point powerful. So that one, it's relatively simple. On the bedfellow business, the only thing to do is distance yourself as fast as you can. Don't tell me about loyalty. Don't tell me about all that stuff. You can deal with that on a personal basis. On a public basis, you've got to distance yourself 9 times out of 10 from the person. Now, there are instances and certain types of institutions where showing loyalty to the person whose bedfellow status with you turns into a crisis will win you better acceptance with certain key people. And sometimes those key people are more important to you, like major donors, major supporters, than hoi polloi, so be it. But most of the time, if you're talking about larger publics at all, you've got to distance yourself from that person. And the same is true with a scandal. Remember, scandals are individual activities. And the way to distance yourself from a scandal generally is to make the point that this is an organization. I represent a brewer out west whose name is probably known to you, but I can't mention it under the code of ethics. And they have a management that is famous for sticking their feet in their mouth, do wonderful employment, I'm guaranteed, you know, for life. But I have a real problem there because the politicians and the media and everybody else, all the social critics, are all over these people, and they like to treat the company as if it was these people, just because it has their name on the door, but they don't own the whole company. There aren't very many of those anymore. And so I have to constantly distance that business and make it clear that the company is not the individual who did this and kind of deal it over. What accidents demand, even if you are totally innocent, is your plan to see that it never happens again. If you don't think that's important, one of the major scandals in the last 20 years involving an organization, not to be a corporation, but I think it's instructive. Because I guess I knew what John Soyan how to do it again on his not-for-profit level. Was Love Canal. Remember Love Canal and all this stuff? In that case, interestingly enough, the Hooker Chemical Company was totally innocent. Hooker Chemical, in the 40s and 50s, had used the latest technology for disposing of their chemical waste, which was the biggest kit over a clay hard pan and dumped the waste in, and when it was full to a certain point, you went away and left it. But Hooker, being a good corporate citizen, even went a step further. They did what was not required and put a clay cap on the thing. So in essence, these waste were sitting there in a clay enclosed vessel. And then they gave the land for $1 to the city of Niagara Falls, which then signed in the deed that they would never use the land for anything other than a park. Because obviously these clay caps could stand a lot of kids playing ball, but it could not stand construction. Well, city governments come and go, and 3 years later, guess what happened? They sold part of it off for a housing development. Hooker didn't raise the flag then.
loudly, you know, the way they should have, but still there. They had given it to the city, and the city was going to do. The result was, from that development came the crack which allowed the noxious fumes to enter the atmosphere. And so here this hook is totally innocent. And when people came to them and said, "What is going on here with your waste dump?" their response was, "No comment. It's none of your business." Here they were totally innocent. And finally, 3 weeks later, when they realized they had to tell their story, they didn't send a public relations person or an officer in the company on television. They sent a lawyer. And the first words out of his mouth when they announced the thing and they turned to him was, "It's not our fault." You know, and 240 million Americans said, "Do that." Babies are apparently having problems and maybe birth defects and unborn infants, and all you can say is, "It ain't our fault." Now, here's a case really of an accident. Hooker was innocent. And all they had to say was, when they first came on, was what Johnson and Johnson said about Donald. The hell with the facts, we'll beat it. We ought to solve this problem. And interestingly, Lord Hooker at that time had already given $1 million to a campaign to deal with the people who were being dispossessed. So you see why I say response, how you handle it, is critical. Well, what else do we know? I could give you, by the way, a lot of examples. I think SMU right now is probably above the first four of those. The governor of Texas, well, the governor of Texas is always an accident, so you could really say response. An organizational failure is going on at the University of Massachusetts right now. Some of you, if you read the Chronicle and others, know that there's been a racial incident there which has blown out of all proportion. The management simply did not deal with it. And so they've got a major problem. I could go on and on. I don't think that'll help, but I can now switch to something else. Let's assume we get into it. Just for a minute. Before we go to the elements in making a plan, I want to make sure we understand these types of crises that can shut off our fundraising and everything else. Supposing you are attacked, you find yourself in a crisis, what should you do? The first thing not to do is respond until, won't be a hooker, wait 3 weeks, but don't shoot in the hip either. The usual tactic of managers is to say, "Oh my God, look at that, we have to get the facts out." Well, now you've already heard me say that the facts are not important. What the public wants to know is, what are the values of this organization? How does it feel about people? How does it feel about me if I were involved in this thing? And so do not respond until you have a strategy, until you have diagnosed it and thought very carefully about exactly who has been infected with the poison and who has not. Because remember this. If it's a public announcement, or even if it's an internal announcement, but you know how quickly that goes around your organization, the internal issue. The first time out today, people are so over-communicating, so into their own thing, that maybe 5 to 10% will even know about it if it's New York Times front page tonight. You look dubious. The council of the school board in Portland, Oregon, and then a dire political mistake last spring. They didn't get their language right, and they announced that they were opening clinics in all of the hospitals. A clinic. Oh my God, what's that going to do with abortion and birth control? Oh my God. So for a week and a half, all the media and all the politicians in Portland were talking of nothing else. And the school superintendent couldn't restrain himself any longer. He wanted to give some facts out there to his public relations officer, and he went out and did a survey. Guess what he found? 8% of the citizens of Portland even knew of incidents that had been in the news for over a week. That's the good news. The bad news was that the highest number they had ever tracked on the school issue was 9% once when they fired a football player. So you and I, we watched the media. And we said, "Oh, everybody does, and I know what the politician says, but that's part of our job." Don't fool yourselves today that the public does. So if we respond right away, we take that 5 or 10% and we immediately build it into 25 or 30%. There's an exponential growth the second time out. People who just kind of, you know, stand past it the first day, suddenly they see it again and say, "Oh, that kind of starts to look interesting. I better read it this time. I better read and watch it on TV. I won't go to the ice boxes during a cold one, during this announcement." So the first thing is, do not respond without a strategy, and then, when you do respond, if you do, So actually, the second point ought to be, see if you can get away without a big public response. We have some wonderful, wonderful research on that.
About 2 years ago now, the Toronto Globe and Mail, which is the combination of New York Times and Wall Street Journal of Canada, suddenly hit with a real long headline one morning accusing the Royal Bank of Canada, which isn't a bank, of gouging on mortgage rates. It said, Royal Bank gouges on mortgages. Now that's pretty hard stuff for a bank. And so the president, of course, got in and he saw it on his desk and he wanted to zip out the door and go, assassinate the editor of the GM. But the public relations person said, look, this proves. Not going to do anything all day. And at the end of the day, we will go out into the subway stations and the bus stop and all the highways and we will do about 500 interviews and find out just what kind of an impact this is having. None of that friends. In their big headline, that means that all of the newspaper boxes, this was what you saw all over town, not mentioned it was on daytime radio and television. 25% of Torontonians were aware of the story. They did the same thing the next night to see what the forget factor was. 5% remembered it. Think of that at all. The GM had another objection that morning. See, and they were now getting the 25%. Now, can you always count on this? No. Particularly in the kind of organizations we work with. If you're talking about general public, large publics out there, and I mean by that alumni, and sometimes even employees, don't think everybody knows it just because it went public. So question whether you have to respond. If you do have to respond, try to blanket the issue. How do you blanket an issue? Well, let's assume that you are being accused of, well, it was a classic case. So there was a restaurant chain in New York that was accused by its competition, as it turned out, of having dirty kitchens. A very fast-rising, famous restaurant chain. They were accused of having dirty kitchens. Now, the company could have issued all kinds of statements saying, our kitchens aren't dirty, golly, they're clean. Now, would you believe that, or would you think it was the old, hair transplant donor all over again? You wouldn't. Okay. So they knew that just rebutting wouldn't work. Instead, they wanted to blanket it. So they got a local politician to give the company an award for clean kitchens. And the big picture the next day, with the company getting an award for clean kitchens, the room was gone. So let me give you an adverse story about that. Are any of you familiar with that wonderful bakery up and down the East Coast called Entenmann's? Entenmann's Bakery. Remember Entenmann's? The rumor got out that they were owned by the Mooney. Remember that? The Mooney Bakery? Okay, now here was Entenmann's. They happened to be a subsidiary of Pet Milk, which is a subsidiary of the Illinois Gulf Corporation, which is the railroad. So they were a subsidiary of a subsidiary. Obviously, they weren't owned by the Mooney. Now, what did those idiots do? They ran full page newspapers. Saying, contrary to rumors, we are not owned by the Mooney. Now, to think about how the human mind works, the human mind has to deal with a positive first. First, it grasps the positive, and then it modifies that to the negative. So, when you read are not owned by the Mooney, what you really take in first is are owned by the Mooney. And that's just basic psychology. It's like Dickie Nixon, I am not a crook, and every American, that's how they're not. See, because that's how we work. Now, how could they have blinded it? The issue. They sort of blanketed the issue by suddenly having, if I had been them, I would have jetted in the chairman of Pet Milk and the chairman of Illinois Gulf, and they would have been seen with me at the Rotary Club and giving me some kind of something that I could stick into the paper and in the employee newsletter. So for some reason, I said, well, that's the wrong by the movie, by that, they're owned by a subsidiary, which is a subsidiary, and a subsidiary. And you blanket the issue because rebutting doesn't work in Americans. Americans love to pick up the paper and say, aha, I always knew it, I always knew it. And now here it is proof. So don't respond to that strategy. See if you can buy without a large public response. And if you have to, see if you can blanket it. Suppose you can't do any of that. Suppose you're absolutely nailed to it. Then target the audience intently. Don't respond in the Washington Post, but instead, use your networking to know who has heard this, who is likely to believe this, and target the response directly to them. Now, always there's a rule. The opinion leaders that you're working with
all the time in your various groups. They have to get the word first, because opinion leaders are media, politics followers. You always got to worry that they may have been infected with this wound. But then don't go to the general public group. Instead, if it's an employee thing, tell the employees. Don't tell the Washington Post to tell the employees. Try to target it to those who are infected and so they don't become terrorists. Now, this is so often abrogated, but it's just hard-headed marketing. Can you raise funds? How do you do it? You don't just go out and ask Joe on the street for the leadership gift, do you? You know who got that leadership gift and what the chances are of getting it. Dealing with crises, you intend to build relationships, use the same kind of discipline. Essentially, all I'm saying to you is use the same type of techniques you're employing elsewhere and apply it here. Let's assume that you're absolutely nailed. Everybody knows about it because the management didn't deal with it right, or because it's a fallout issue that came back up. The most magic words in America are "we screwed up." And within the last 2 weeks, a number of us who deal in this kind of work were asked by the White House to suggest to them whether or not there was any way that presidency could be saved. I believe it then, and I believe it to this day what I told them. If you had gone out first, you'd be a man who did that, I'll let you change it. You already said, give it to Ehrlichman, give it to this one, give it to that one. Now that you get back to one of because it is so rare for an American organization to have the kind of humanity to stand up and say, we screwed up. And so when we do it, we take a lot of power onto ourselves. Well, we don't want these issues though. So how can we plan to avoid them? How can we conduct issue anticipation? The only way I know is to build it into the operations, because it's from operations that the problems spring. Therefore, I think it's up to us, as I said at the beginning, to insist that our organizations give some thought to having an emergency plan, because these things never come with time to think about it. An emergency plan consists of at least six elements. Let me tell you what they are. The first one is a decision-making team, and that is not the CEO or the senior executive. They may be represented, they may be honored, but the reason you can't leave decision-making during the hitting of a crisis to them is A, they may be the targets, B, they are embarrassed usually and emotional. There's something about the executive isolation in our country that when these things happen, I can't tell you how many times some big executive who's so worldly wise and says, hey, it's not fair. It's hitting on me. You've never heard that? You've been involved in these? It's there all the time. And so they've got that kind of emotional involvement. We cannot expect them, therefore, to make rational decisions. And if you've got an outside director, maybe, or someone who is not part of the organization but savvy about these things, they can deflate assumptions and give it that real world feel. So a good crisis plan means that the chief executive has to say, okay, in order to benefit myself, I will have the enlightened self-interest to turn the basic decision-making then over to at least a group if I don't already have such a group. The second thing that's needed is a feedback network. We've all got these, our key supporters out there, our key employees inside, so that we can know exactly what's getting across. How far is the infection spreading? This is so critical, and yet it's so easy. Furthermore, I talked about participation. Now more people are participating in helping the organization overcome it, and that in itself gives power. The third thing is a designated response officer, someone to handle the inquiries. As we talk here, a client of mine is hopefully settling a long-standing boycott. And our energy largely went into putting together questions and answers that might come at the response officer so that he is well versed in all the off-the-wall stuff that may come. And it's only because that person has had a week or two to be groomed and trained. This is a profession. But it's that week or two of really looking into all the off-key things that he will be able to do that job. And to think that all of a sudden you can just have somebody say, oh, well, you handle the inquiry. So that way usually lies disaster. Now, in addition to the response officer, we need a designated proactive communications officer. Somebody who doesn't worry about what they're asking us, but somebody who looks at our key publics, sees that the board and the opinion leaders and the big donors are kept in touch with this, so that they don't become subjects of the great fund. So that in fact, they who stand to be embarrassed, because they have already taken a leadership position in society and on our face, and now there's an egg on their face. They need us keeping on project so they can probably go out there and throw that thing out one night, because something will really happen. But you see, we constitute their opinion leadership. They can't do it unless someone is out. The fifth step is a designated cheerleader to deal with the internal audience, the employees and staff. If you take those three people and give them the information from a feedback network, and have all of that working on a decision-making team, you can fail through a crisis. There is a fix, and that is you may need an investigative team. A group of well-respected people inside the organization and outside very often have to have legal positions or accounting positions, people that have to have some kind of general trustworthiness in society in general terms. But know that if we get into a shouting match in public, that we may need to use them as an investigative team to go find out what really happened here, and report back. Now notice what that does. I talked about distancing. That distances the organization from the problem. Furthermore, it buys us time. The chief executive can say, well, maybe something went wrong, you know, we hate when things go wrong, we like to think we're supposed to do, but you know we're not. By the way, people start saying, oh, well, as a human being, I can go along with that. He says, but, you know, I'm the captain ship out here, I'm responsible. So I don't think I'll look into this, or I got to do text this. What can do it? Never I thought it was good to do this. I could have been given the power of permission. And look how it brought him time. He did it earlier on Grenada. Remember the flap over Grenada? That's what he was allowed to go in and see the people up to. What he did was, he appointed 20 leading Americans to begin a report on Grenada. Now, 6 months later, we're not going to talk about that anyway. When those 20 Americans come back and say, Ryan, you did just right. If Joe Citizen wants to criticize, and I don't have to criticize the president, he has to criticize 20 million Americans. Most of us don't want any part of that. So we went on to, you know, develop the Iran-Contra affair. There's another way to do that. Those are some of the steps. Now, notice what's happened here. A number of people are involved in this. What spreads problems is when only a few people are handling it. Because then we start having distrust in our own organization, don't we? We say, you know, I never looked at you on the CEO yet. The response officer is something you're going to hear in the news, the media, politicians, you've got a hotline. But their only job is to do that. They can concentrate on responding to people who come to the organization for information about it. Yeah, typical. I've been involved in some pretty big screw-ups, and my experience is that this doesn't work. Because you're on this hand trying to say something to the local media, or the politician, or the leading donor, or somebody, and then over on this hand you're trying to rally the troops, you know, you get torn apart.
Yes.
Yes. The thing that generally is most convincing about this is that if you're separated into these three jobs, you risk cross-fertilization here. So that this person can honestly respond to critics with the material that's needed for those critics. This person can be seen as a somewhat different song in terms of the detail, because the job here is to emphasize the good things that are going on, don't let this one little thing drag us down. And this person here is critical, because it says to the people inside the organization, remember, you are the organization, and above all, we want to stay close to you. Well, unfortunately, my time is running out. I could share an awful lot more with you.
I just want to close with two points. Do not overlook the opportunities that are present in crisis. My brewer that I told you about has been moving out across America after being a regional brewer. And when the brewer goes into a new community and groups of boycotting this group, all the groups of people say how awful they are. And they all praise that my staff and I use smiling and absolutely love it. Because about a year earlier, one of our leading competitors went from being a regional brewer to a national brewer, and then he pounded all the fiscal hoopla of a new brand, and they'll never even know who it is. But all our enemies are getting us awareness like we never could believe. And all the people who think they don't like us, just I'll try it. And if people try it, a certain number stick to the brand. Never overlook the forget factor. People tend to forget very quickly. And the last thing they forget is the moniker, the handle, the name. That's why politicians say, very correct, just spell my name out. I come from New England, remember, and we're proof of that. For 10 years, we had a guy elected to the Massachusetts Governor Council from Deer Island Penitentiary. He'd been a politician for 20 years, very well known in the community. The detail, the fact that he was cooling the deal out of Deer Island was unimportant. Every year, they wrote in enough votes to re-elect this guy because they knew his name and they didn't know those other persons. At least they knew his name. Don't overlook that. SMU, if it uses its head, will come out of this thing and raise more dollars in 4 years than they ever did before. Don't tell it to hope you go down the clinic, but that's another story. So don't forget to forget that. And there are opportunities here. You are now on people's agenda. Finally, I talk a lot about the science. And I just want to reinforce one more time what we as professionals already know that we have to look and have the science. But we also have to do some judgment. And I just want to leave you with a little example of judgment that may help you remember what I mean. Making the right decision. At Oxford University, as I'm sure you know, that the great sport is punting on the Thames. It's a very shallow, narrow river there as opposed to the campus, and they have these little flat-bottom boats, and you get in with a long stick and you punt, and you push along the Thames. Well, for some reason, about 3 years ago, the Dons, which you also know is the name of the senior professors at Oxford, but the band, almost entirely the male group at that time, decided that they wanted to have a new baby club down the Thames. Now, there's some of you who tried in Oxford. I don't know why they wanted it, but they did. They called this place the Pleasure, and all these kids quite well with people out there, and they go, new baby. But the rule is, since it was Oxford now, the century has three women's colleges as well as the traditional men's colleges, but when these bands are in the Pleasure, they tie a red bandana around the birth tree. Men and women just know not to go faster than that. Well, the story is told that one day some foreign women were there, and she didn't even know what the damn bandana was, so they went sailing right on down the Thames. Well, when the walruses saw this, they, of course, were alarmed, and most of them took their hands naturally and did this. But not knowing followers, and we've now created the poet at Oxford. He took his hands and he did this. How important to know what's critical. Because after the danger was passed, all turned and they said, Morris, what are you doing? He said, I don't know about you guys, but around Oxford, I'm known by my book.
Thank you very much, Bob. Thank you very much. We all enjoyed that, and I think we all